My name is Rob Seltzer, and welcome to Exiled Eagles. Much like Roy Hodgson, we don't change much. So, joining me today, we have Dale Quarty in the Shire. Now, Dale, is that a hotspot? Are you in a hotspot again?
No. Mate.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Nor am I. Oh, I don't think I am. I might be. Ned Rock in Free as a Bird, Victoria now. You must be loving it, loving life.
Yeah, that's nice to just sort of put the table a little bit. But yeah, it's just, as you say, very nice and free. Get to go, went to the pub, watched the Palace game. No issues. It was very exciting.
There was many issues, but we'll come to them later. And Marky Werner up in Never Lockdown, Queensland. How are you, Mark?
I'm loving life up here. Business as usual. Some of you filthy southerners wanting to get into my best state. So we've re-erected those concrete barriers overnight, and no one's coming in or going out.
Yeah, saw that. That's nice, isn't it? Merry Christmas, everyone.
exactly.
Right, well, since we last podded, we've played about 7,000 games. So we've played Burnley, Newcastle, West Brom, Spurs, West Ham, and Liverpool. Would that be right? I think that's right. Yep. Now,
definitely
I
didn't play Liverpool. It didn't happen. I don't remember it.
Nah, but look, we're going to group into three.
We didn't play.
We'll group into three, right? I want to group Burnley, Newcastle, and West Brom first half into one clump. I want West Brom second half, Spurs, and West Ham into the other clump, and Liverpool will be Liverpool. All right? And I want to start with the good clump of West Brom second half, Spurs, and West Ham. So I thought we played pretty well there. So with that, we've got to give credit where credit's due to whether he got it 100% right for that second half and the other two games we mentioned there. I was optimistic. Dale, were you feeling pretty damn good after that 2.5 games of football? What were your thoughts watching that?
Look, West Brom, we won 5-1, and there's never a space on the video printer that says how you won. I do think the sending off changed the game, and it made an average team not very good. And when you've got the likes of Wilf and Eze, who are going to stretch teams, then, you know, they're going to stretch lesser opposition anyway. So when they're chasing a game, then, you know, you're going to get up. That's fine. 5-1. Woo! The Spurs game, again, not going to moan at a point against Spurs at the time. We're flying in the league. My only gripe in that game is that I felt we probably didn't deserve the point in terms of Guaita had all the work to do and Lloris basically had one thing to do and Semi stuffed it up and that's why we got a point. And the West Ham game, well, where were you when Christian Benteke and Sebastian Haller scored in the same match? I mean, Jesus Christ.
I was on the train going into work.
Another game with two halves, that one, and a sending off that probably changed the game, a bit like the West Brom game. But if there's one team in the league, you'll probably be happy to be a goal down and it wouldn't really change much. And ultimately losing your top man to Benteke, it would be a Palace Roy Hodgson side. It doesn't really matter if you lose that person because you're still going to be so well drilled. First half, I thought we really should have been 2 or 3 up and out of sight. That's football. Great goal by Haller. He won't do that again. We go on.
True. Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. Ned, what about you? How are you feeling? I mean, I know you've been fairly pragmatic about Roy the whole time anyway. But having seen, it was definitely a difference between the first clump of games, which we'll come to in a second, and this clump of games. I mean, how are you feeling after watching us against second half West Brom, Spurs, West Ham?
I think the first bit was, I think, how many times have we seen Palace play a game where a player gets sent off for the opposition and we sit there and go, yes, this is going to be great, and it just really isn't. So it was quite nice to see us have a team that we should beat lost an advantage and we went, right, we're going to absolutely put you to the sword and give an absolute battering, which is very un-Palace-like, but very enjoyable. So that was good. And then obviously, yeah, you go into the Spurs game, which I think, you know, is one of those ones where it caught the early goal and responded really well, which I know has been one of your main gripes, Rob. So the fact that we managed to do that was obviously really positive. I know Dale was talking about Guaita having a good game, which obviously he did, but, you know, it's kind of his job. He did also absolutely gift them the goal that they did score. So, you know, on another day, maybe he keeps all of them out and we win 1-0. So I think on the balance of that, our second half performance was outstanding. So again, I don't think you could say that the point was undeserved unless you fully subscribe to the Jose Mourinho theory of chances are what deserve things and everything else in the game is irrelevant, which has got some merit to it. But I'm happy to take the point there. And then West Ham's just standard West Ham game. I don't know what it is about that fixture that makes really, really, really shit players score really, really, really good goals. Got Andy Carroll, Sebastian Haller, Jordan Ayew. Just all of a sudden, yeah, Payet. I mean, you'd argue he's a reasonably lazy but reasonably talented player. But I mean, yeah, you just get all these players since in that fixture. Suddenly, I don't know what it is. But unfortunately, they're usually against us.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to sit there and go, I mean, I did laugh at some of the players, some of the Palace fans going, oh, it's a high boot. You're going, all right, calm down. The bloke scored the best goal of his career. You don't want those sorts of goals disallowed, even if they are against us. I'd just rather have us go and score a second at the other end. But yeah, look, I think there were three very positive performances. And I mean, even the Liverpool game, which I know you want to talk about a little bit, particularly in the first half, I didn't think we did all that much wrong. Just every time they got the ball, it ended up in the back of the net. Like the clinical finishing in that game was absurd. It was four games in a row that we've sort of gone, all right, well, we'll go out and be a bit more expansive. And look, it's worked for three, but when it doesn't work, we'll talk about that later.
We sure will. And what about you, Mark? What about you? Your thoughts that those 2.5 games of incredibly exciting football?
Yeah, look, much the same. Even to add to the first half of the West Brom game was interesting, wasn't it? You know, they scored twice effectively, one own goal and a goal. Like Nez said, the player off, and then I thought, oh, we're bound to lose this now. They're down to 10 men. And, had a go. Come from the clouds and banged in four in the second half. Zaha with a couple, and Christian coming back to life with a couple. That was great. And everything was rosy. Nice to get a scoreline like that and helping our goal difference along. In the Spurs game, I thought Vicente was outstanding, albeit his fluff against Kane, which was so annoying that Kane scored a goal like that. It pissed me off so much. Him or Son, it was bound to happen. It was script written. Just surprising that it didn't come in sort of the 86th or 88th minute that we talked about, Rob. But I thought all resolute. We didn't look down in the mouth. Guaita didn't, throw his toys out the pram or stick his bottom lip out. He, you know, punched his gloves and thought, okay, get back in this, and which is good. I think the rest of the team kind of fed off that maybe a bit because they had a lot to do in that game. And then, of course, we pegged one back, which was fantastic. Thankfully, with not too much left in the game, because I think we all had the feeling if there was another 5 or 10 minutes in it, Spurs were probably going to sneak another in. Took that, and I thought that was pretty good going from where we're at. And then, obviously, West Ham, Tekkers again, in there banging one in, and then, you know, unlucky to have the 3 points and then concede. But, I mean, yeah, you concede a goal like that, anyone's just got to put their hands up and just say, well, well played. That's a worldie, which Palace, you know, as supporters, we're all used to conceding. Just a shame Wayno wasn't in the, between the sticks for that one, because he's got a few.
It would have been his fault if Harry was scored against him as well.
Right, it would. It would have been Wayne's fault. It would have been Hennessy's fault if he'd been a goal. Which I 100% agree with. He wouldn't have moved. Any other keeper would have got there, but unfortunately he wasn't a goal, so it was a good goal.
I think we can blame him anyway, to be honest. If he'd been there, maybe he could have saved it. I mean, it was a bit on there. He's slightly taller than Guaita. So, I mean, if he'd been in goal instead of Guaita, might have hit him in the face and he could have kept it out. So
that's a very good point. Well,
if he had yelled out at Vicente and then raised his hand in an appropriate manner to get attention, maybe that would have sprung Guaita into motion to say that. Anyway, he didn't, and that was 1-1. So you know that, and that little stretch, yeah, it was happy days, wasn't it? A win and a couple of draws, and everything was rosy in that chunk, Rob, that you wanted me to answer about now.
Yeah. Well, and you, I think you've all summed up quite nicely. I mean, West Brom, the second half that we've gone through, I think it's very nice to see us actually go at a team and just basically rip them apart. We ripped them apart. They had no idea where to run, where to go, who to mark, and we destroyed them. And the thing about Spurs, when I understand, you know, Mourinho saying that, you know, Spurs had the chances, and yes, Dale Lloris was fairly fairly quiet or fairly untroubled until he fluffed his lines. But I don't think when we attacked, I don't think the Spurs back four looked particularly solid the whole time. Okay, we didn't create amazing chances, but it wasn't the usual. We're 1-0 down to Spurs, like the Palace performance, 1-0 down to Spurs. We've got no chance of getting back in this. I generally thought there was a chance of getting back in it, and we did. And West Ham, I mean, my stream was cutting in and out on the train. So I watched most of the first half. I missed the last 5 minutes of the first half when Tekkers does the flick. But I saw the goal and I thought we were a much better team then. Probably would have been worthy of at least a 2-goal cushion. And yeah, I mean, the red card is ridiculous. How you can get someone sent off for jumping, I don't know. But that's what happened. And it changed the game, and we fought hard. Now, I want to take us back now to the other clump of games, the first clump, which is Burnley, Newcastle and West Brom first half. And I'll talk about these first, and I'll kind of throw it over to you guys for Ned to disagree with me.
I disagree.
But exactly. But does the two different clumps of games show how wrong Roy got it in those games? To show that we've all, I mean, I've been the biggest advocate of this, saying we can do more, and that we all know I'm not a massive Roy fan, but I will hold my hands up and say he got it 100% right in the games we spoke about. He was brilliant, and I'll give him full marks. I thought he was atrocious in these games, Burnley, Newcastle, and to be honest with you, that first half of West Brom, after we scored, we just sat back again, and they weren't that good. Okay, the sending off did change it, but I think if we played like we did the second half for the first half, we could have been 2 or 3 up against them anyway. They couldn't handle Wilf, Eze, and Benteke. They couldn't. Simple, but we did it. Newcastle, atrocious. Burnley, I mean, Christ. So, did those next three games where Roy got it right show how wrong he got it for Burnley, Newcastle, and in my personal opinion, the first half of West Brom, that could be a grey area. So I'm going to throw straight over to argumentative Ned to try and prove me wrong there. But I mean, we've just spoken about, and I said, I agree, he was fantastic against the other games. But do you see where I'm coming from, where he got it very, very wrong in games that we should have comfortably won?
I think in terms of saying that he got it horribly wrong is not quite fair. I think that you need to look at sort of some of the matchups of the teams that we're playing against. So Spurs obviously were not really trying to hit us, which gave us a little bit more time on the ball to get into the game. I think even in the games that we were good, it took us little bits of time here and there to actually work our way into that. We needed more than sort of, you know, once we got that sort of few minutes of possession, then we were able to start attacking, which we didn't necessarily have against some of those other teams. I think, yes, the West Brom game definitely helped in that it showed that if we go forward, we can still be solid at the back. I think also the fact that by the time you got to those last three games, we did have players that were a bit more match fit and a bit more prepared in terms of players like Ezzy, who I think was probably one of the key aspects in there, and also Benteke. So I think in terms of, it's tough to say, yeah, maybe he could have been a bit more aggressive a bit earlier, but he wasn't. Now he is, and now it's great. So let's keep doing that.
Yeah, okay. And just before I jump, before I flick over to Mark there, yes, Benteke's been obviously a very key part of it. But Benteke wasn't starting in either of those two games, where he then, Roy said, we've been building up for him to start or whatever against West Brom, and he showed that he should have started. So that's where I'm coming from, whereas Roy got it wrong. Like, we had no strikers. But on the
flip side of that,
against
though,
Newcastle.
On the flip side of that, though, Rob, let's say he plays Benteke. Benteke doesn't have a blinder, like he hasn't for the last 2 years. All the fans go, oh, what's he playing Benteke for? Benteke's rubbish. He can't do anything. He's so shit. Why is he on the pitch? Roy's a terrible manager. And we end up back at square one. So I can sort of see the hesitation to make sure that Benteke is fit. There is a game plan that is tailored to his needs, because we all know that if the game plan is not tailored to Christian Benteke's needs, he is shit. When it's tailored to his needs, he's great. When it's not, he might as well not be out there. So I think the fact that I can understand the hesitation there, because it's one of those ones where if it does go wrong, he knows that straight away everyone's on his back about it. And that's the number one complaint they're going to have. Why are you playing Benteke? That's the number one complaint they would have had if it doesn't work.
And I see what you're saying, but I'm going to completely disagree entirely, because instead of playing a recognised striker, any recognised striker, he plays Jeff Schlupp up front. Now, with regards to your comments about Benteke before he got injured and suspended at the back end of last season, apart from scoring, which I know he is a striker and he's a scorer.
Yeah, he was good.
I thought he was very, very good.
I thought he was good too.
And he's been playing extremely, incredibly well. So I don't think any fans have got on his back for playing Benteke, but I feel like he opened himself right up by playing Schlupp up front when you've got Benteke, Batshuayi, and we're not even going to mention Jordan Ayew yet, because I'm coming to Jordan Ayew, Jesus. But we've got those players on the bench. So I think Roy got it very wrong, and I think he get deserved criticism for that. I mean, Joe Linton's bullshit. He's awful. Christ.
Yeah, awful player. Yeah,
but Steve Bruce plays him because he's a striker and he plays him up front. You don't see Steve Bruce playing Matty Longstaff up front instead of him. That's exactly what Hodgson did. But anyway, Mark, what are your thoughts with regards to the first clump of games? So do you agree with myself thinking Roy got it very, very wrong and it showed, and he's turned it around very well? Or do you agree with Ned thinking that it's just Roy and, you know, he got lucky? Or a bit unlucky?
I'll jump on your camp here, Rob. I think it was very bereft of ideas. The Burnley game, you know, Wood scored in the 8th minute, so we've still got a full game to chase that down and at least get something out of it. And the game could have gone for 900 minutes. It never looked like scoring. The only positive out of that game is Chris Wood scored, so, you know, and Anzac got the winning goal. So apart from that, there was absolutely nothing to cheer about. It just didn't look much chop at all. And then we bankrolled that into the Newcastle game that was dire. And, you know, it looked like we're just going to bat away for a very dour, boring 0-0. They score in the 88th to 90. He brings on Michi and Gyro and Tekkers, none of which really had an impact. The Burnley game brought on Jeffrey with sort of a bit over half an hour to go, and Benteke was sort of 20-something minutes to go. Didn't bring much to the table. The first half of the West Brom game, like I said, we still didn't score in that first half. It was only an own goal by them and one in the right end for them. So at that point, the end of that first half of the West Brom game was, I left saying, for fuck's sake, Roy, what are you doing here, man? Like, get something going. We're only saying last pod, we've arguably got the best squad we've ever had, good depth all over the park, and just been pissed up the wall by him. So, your camp, big fella.
What I will say quickly about that Newcastle game is, obviously, yes, it was a shitful game to watch, but if Dale's favourite player, PVA, in the 86th minute, decides to play a nice side-foot, simple pass to Mishi Batshuayi, who for the first time in all season was onside, to tap in a goal in the 86th minute. We don't concede those last two. We go home with a 1-0 win. It's a shit 1-0 win. It's not a very exciting game to watch, but it's 3 points. And that's what we would have been looking for. And so if that goes in, you sit there and turn around and go, okay, well, the pragmatism's worked. Because of one pass, it doesn't happen. They go straight up the other end because, again, Dale's favourite player, PBA, has just run down the wrong end of the pitch and instead of passing a ball straight to his teammate to score, has drilled it across and they get to come straight back through that space twice in 90 seconds and score two goals. So I think it's a game of millimetres.
That didn't happen.
It didn't happen, but it could. But it very easily could have. I mean, at the same time, yeah, at the same,
but
at the
also
same
very
time,
easily, Guiza could have saved Harry Kane's shot.
He could have, and West Brom could have not had a player sent off, and they could have gone on to win 2-1. We're all playing ifs, buts, and maybes, but I'm sort of sitting there going, if you're going to sit there and play it in one regard, you've got to be able to play it in both regards and go, well, his pragmatism nearly got us to 3 points in that game. It didn't.
Got 0 points in that game. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I think it's absolute bollocks because it kind of puts us in a situation where you can think of one opportunity in the 86th minute that could have turned that around. We didn't have any other chance in the whole game.
I think that's the thing with the pragmatism side of things. Is if you not confident that your team, if you're going to go into a game, say Liverpool, and there's a crap load of chances in that game. You know that the more chances there are in a game, the more likelihood there is that the other team is going to score more chances than you are because they've got a better side. If you keep the chances down to one or two chances each, then suddenly it becomes a lot more likely that you're going to be able to get something out of the game. So then you can talk about something in the 86 minutes. So, for example, if PBA against Liverpool at 7-0 down, runs down and doesn't pass it to Mishi Batshuayi, no one gives a shit because 7-0, 7-1, who cares? Whereas 0-0 to 1-0 in the 86th minute is a very big moment.
All right, we can get stuck on that for a while. Let's move on.
I think our take has got to be on what actually happened in the game, not what could have or should.
But that did actually happen in the game. That did.
We didn't fucking score, did he? So we're talking about getting up out of the game, and you're talking about, well, that could have happened and we could have got something. Fucking didn't, mate. It didn't happen. So, you know, well, I would love that
to
have happened, sure, but it didn't.
Is that right, Dale? Which camp are you in? How do you feel about it all?
First of all, let's just qualify this by saying Patrick Van Aanholt is far.
We'll come to him as well, don't worry.
No, he's not your favourite player, Dan. That's my mistake.
I think that he's an absolute waste of space. Next point. Now, Burnley and Newcastle, we missed one big glaring fact here, which pains me.
I know what you're going to say, and I'll have a rebuttal in a minute.
How the fuck a professional outfit who have weeks, hours, months together on a training pitch fall apart because one person doesn't play is fucking outrageous. There's going to be a time in this club, and it won't be that far away, when Wilfred Zaha does not play. And what does that mean? We won't win another game again. We looked bereft of any ideas, any creativity. Playing Jeff Schlupp as a number 10 with Eze on the left wing was absolutely ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. Either play a striker or swap those two rounds, because it is just... it's ridiculous. You're swapping Wilf with a guy who's won a Premier League title as a left back. Now, Schlupp has had this amazing turnaround into being a midfielder of sorts. I mean, he's in the Ghana squad every bloody 6 weeks as an attacker. I don't understand how. But that is wrong. That isn't pragmatism. That's just plain wrong. I get the pragmatism. I completely understand. Like, as annoying as it is to watch, it doesn't matter. It doesn't say how you win, how you lose or whatever. And we would be at the end of the season when Roy's got 52 points and we're happy as Larry that we finished at 10th and it's our best finish. We'll forget about the time he played Jeff Schlupp as a number 10. he was number 10. What the fuck? With no recognised striker. Ridiculous. And that leads to stuff like us losing to Newcastle at home, who are, if there's one team worse to watch than us when we play badly, it's Newcastle all the time. I'm in the camp of, I'm in my own camp. I think that we have to turn around and say, yeah, what Rory does for us is good. We understand why he does it. However, we shouldn't be in a situation where our game plan effectively falls to pieces because Wilf isn't playing. And that's just, you know, I appreciate that we're only Crystal Palace and that there's other clubs have more money than us, not everyone else. But you don't see other teams fall apart like that when a player doesn't play. It's got to be a way around it. And if Wilf got injured tomorrow, if Wilf plays on Saturday and does his ACL, does that mean we're relegated? Put your money in it now, because why can't we win without him? That's all I want to know.
I agree with everything you say there, and that's kind of where I think he got it so wrong, is that he didn't pick a team that think, right, we haven't got our best player that can create stuff. So instead of kind of moving that around, as you say, maybe giving Eze a bit of a free role so he can just pop up in places, have Townsend on one wing and Schlupp on the other so they can actually get some pace going forward with Gyro in the middle who can pick a pass and Tekkers up front, you know, that can hold the ball up and bring your Eze's and your just look. I mean, he didn't do it. And he got it, I think, he just got it wrong. Really, really, really wrong.
I'll say this now about Hodgson. He has no faith in Batshuayi. So...
No, clearly.
Send him back. I mean, if that's the case, I mean, like, we should send him back.
Send him back.
Yeah, we're paying wages for a bloke to sit on the bench.
Yeah.
We would have a lot of wages.
We'd be better off getting Conor Gallagher. And I know ultimately we'll probably turn around and say, but would he have played ahead of Jimmy Mack or ahead of Jairo? Don't know. But do you know what? I think he'd have added more to us as a squad than we're seeing from Batshuayi at the moment.
Yeah, I agree.
Wickham, well, I don't even know why I mentioned his name. I know you're going to come on to IU in a bit. I've long said it. I have a joke because he's Ghanaian and I'm half Ghanaian, but the guy is brain dead. He doesn't understand football. And that effectively does just leave us with Christian Benteke. So I can kind of understand to a certain extent why he's trying to find a square peg to put in a round hole. But my God, just send Batshuayi home. Send him back. No good, no point.
I'd agree with that. So, look, I mean, let's cover, so we've covered five games there. And I don't want to spend too long on this because everyone's going to be talking about it. It's fucking embarrassing, to be honest with you. But we're going to have to mention it. And I've got, let's talk about the 7-0 debacle that we all stayed up. Well, me, Ned and Dale stayed up to 1:20 in the morning to watch. And it was 12:20 for Mark. I'll start. So at halftime, if I'm going to be honest with you, at halftime, 3-0 down, one, I couldn't believe it. And two, I wasn't that bothered. I was more annoyed at the performance when we played Burnley, Newcastle, to be honest with you, because I thought we looked dangerous. I don't think their defence looked comfortable at all. I thought we looked dangerous, that we could score, and they happened to have three shots, three goals. It's just one of those days, right?
Hold on, I'll stop you there. We couldn't score. We got near their penalty box, and we fucking crapped ourselves.
I thought we looked like we could score. That which brings me, I mean, it's Jordan Ayew, and if Jordan Ayew ever gets picked above any other striker again, then if Hodgson has to really just leave immediately, because Christ, it's a.
Even Jeff Schlupp.
I play Jeff Schlupp over Jordan Ayew 100%, 100 after that performance on Saturday, where he dummies the ball when just take a touch and dummy Fabinho, who had sold himself completely, who had dived in to block the shot. He do exactly what Tekkers did the week before against West Brom. He scores. It's a 2-1 against the keeper with Wilf, and Wilf's got no anywhere near him. He can stop put his foot on the ball, look at him, and then pass the ball, and he still misses. Holy shit. But this is where I think that, and so I'm not going to put 7-0 on Hodgson at all, but I do think he needs to shoulder some of this for this particular reason. We've got plan A, which we've spoken about, which is that 4-4-2, quite fluid. Now we're playing Liverpool, who play with three in midfield. Henderson, we've nailed him, and Kate have played there this weekend. We are playing a 33-year-old Jimmy Mack and a 29-year-old booking machine in Luka, who has no pace, against three midfielders. Not only that, those two have played three games in a week, with Mack has done 390 minutes in a week. He was spent. So, me personally, you think you're gonna move that, you're gonna change that around. Maka comes out, you bring Gyro in. I would have started Schlupp in the middle, so we have that three in the middle. We have to change up. This is Liverpool. This isn't Burnley. This isn't Newcastle. This game calls for, you know, match him in the midfield. We got completely outrun. I thought Maka had a decent game, but he was so goddamn tight.
I think the flip side of that though, Rob, is I think that was the plan until about the 70th minute of the West Ham game, when the only player in our squad who can play as a lone striker and hold the ball up top got sent off and suspended. So
How do you know that?
You don't know that, but you have to sit there and go, would Benteke have played against Liverpool? Yes, he would have. If Benteke plays, is it more likely that he's going to be able to play? If you're going to play the 4-3-3 that you're talking about, who plays the lone striker role? Because none of our strikers can hold the ball up above.
Well, look,
none of them.
Well, last season, he loved Ayew doing that. Because Ayew would start over Benteke doing that exact role. So why not start Ayew, although he was poo, we didn't know he was going to be that bad, start and have that midfield. And then when the fourth goal goes in, and I'll come to, well, let's talk about the centre-backs who were both atrocious. And if that was Mamadou Sakho, I would be sitting here trying to defend Sakho whilst you and Dale rightly put the boot in. And he did against Chelsea. But Cahill and Kouyaté were dog shit. Absolutely dog shit. Yes, I understand Kouyaté has credit in the bank, but I thought Sakho has just had some credit in the bank as well. Kouyaté has been on the decline.
Credit in what?
Mate.
The bank of getting sent off,
the same bank that Rob responded to the email from. It was a Nigerian email.
Yeah, in Nigeria. They were both atrocious. How about we start two actual centre backs against Liverpool? I mean, a freak notion here. Maybe put Kouyaté in the middle as that third person. You know, bit more mobile, bit of bite about him. There's a thought. And then Luke, if you listen to the interview that Luka gave, Roy came out and said at half time, like, right, it's 3-0, shut up shop, which I 100% agree with, because we're not getting back in that game. Everyone says Istanbul, we ain't getting back in that. So I'm more than happy to take a 3-0 and get out of there. We concede four. We don't change the shape. Jordan Ayew, inexplicably lasts 90. Holy shit. 90 minutes for that poo. PVA. Okay, so Roy has to take some criticism by why he doesn't change the shape to just condense that midfield down. I think he picked the wrong players in there. But again, I know we'll come to it on the flip side. Salah and Henderson can both have those. They will never both score those exact same goals in the same game again, ever. It just won't happen. It was just one of those days. I'll accept it's one of those days and move on from the result. But I think there's things that could have happened there that didn't, especially in the second half.
Doesn't sound like you're moving on very well at the moment, mate.
Well, no, I mean, that's just my thoughts. So, I'm going to go Mark first. Mark gets first crack at this.
All right.
Apart from the 7-0, and it's not all, and it's certainly not all Roy's fault, how do you feel about the manager after that, though?
Yeah, it was heartbreaking, mate. It's the biggest loss Palace have suffered since I've been supporting them in March 2004, when I got out to Old Blighty and had a stay there, and they became my mob. And to add insult to injury, I was hosting our Crystal Palace Brisbane supporters group Christmas party up here. At the Pig and Whistle, been looked after there. We had a bar tab put on by management. A couple of boys got out for it. One of your lads, Tim Phillips, from the Sydney, now residing up here. It was his birthday. So many happy returns, Tim. Gary Cale's birthday as well. I wore my Cale shirt in his honour. And
he got one for every year of his age.
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit hard to take, mate. I in earnest, thought we were the better team in the first half hour. You know, we're creating a lot of chances, getting the ball down in the box, and then, you know, Palace just wanted to walk the ball over the line, you know, and then it just proceeded to for the wheels to fall off at a great rate of knots. I was pretty wankered by about 5-0, so I didn't see either of Salah's goals. I was literally at the bar when that happened. I think it was in quick succession. And then, then I was just hoping they didn't fucking get to 9 at that point. You know, there was a bit of everything in it. You know, 8 shots on goal from Liverpool, 7 go in. That doesn't happen often. We got one more cross than them in. We got one more corner than them and a whole lot less goals. So, you know, there's a few trains of thought. Could have Roy done something? You know, is it just one of those day outs that Liverpool decided to have? And unfortunately, we were the opposing 11 on that day. Bit of everything. But yeah, like a few other people on a few other pods, I was more disappointed from Burnley Newcastle, if I'm honest, because it was got to a point like that. Like, yeah, Christian Ball was out the window and I was just like, yeah, we're not getting anything out of this. Let's just, you know, want it to end as quickly as possible. I couldn't have navigated a way out of it. But there could have been a few shrink pulled. With the centre-back pairing, if we're getting into that a bit, I think Cale was certainly found out of his years there. He was off the pace. Kiate, who has shown, you know, or sort of paid dividends in central defence, playing out of position where he's played for us, more so in midfield, had to play there for Senegal, also got found out. And then, you know, it was just a clusterfuck after that.
Agreed. Dale, what do you reckon? Do you think, are you just saying one of those days, no one else to play, players just had one of those off days, or do you think there could have been something changed either before the game or during the game that might have resulted in a lesser?
Nothing's changed. I mean, before the game, who would you put as your centre-back pairing? Tompkins not fully fit. You would have said Shek Kiato and Gary Cahill. Nothing's going to change there. He's going to put a right-back. It was always going to be Klein. He's going to put a left-back. Hate him or not, he's going to pick Patrick Meinhold. Midfield, pretty much picked itself. The IRA for Luka, but Luka was captain, and you obviously see something in Luka, and no Benteke, so the forwards picked themselves. Done. Liverpool were clinical, we were not. I don't necessarily... I think there's a difference between playing well and playing well up to a point. I think we played well up until we got to their penalty box, and we literally didn't look like we had a clue what to do with it. Wilf, Eze, IU all made wrong decisions. I won't go for all the goals. I think it was their 5th goal, I think, when Patrick Benarholt was just a disgrace. He was up the field, he lost the ball, he then starts running back, and he does some sort of kung fu attempted, I don't know what, lands on his arse, and they go on and score. I mean, look, that's the only one for me. Like, I look at his performances and just go, this guy's not good enough for us, which is weird because he's a Dutch international. He should be good enough for us. I don't think he's a left back. I think he should be playing left wing or left wing back in the back three, but with a back three, whatever. Look, were we going to beat Liverpool? No. Should we have lost? Were we going to lose 7-0? Possibly. Let's be honest. Liverpool been building to that sort of result ever since they lost 7-2 to Aston Villa.
Have they? Everyone's been saying that they've not been that good. You know, people.
Exactly. So that result was coming. That's what I mean. They haven't been great. That result was coming. 100% was coming because you look at that side and let's be honest, Arsenal aside, who don't have the best players, they have the worst players. the quality of player generally doesn't lie. Yeah, the quality of manager and quality of player doesn't lie. And as much as I hate Klopp and whatever else, Liverpool won the league for a reason. They deserve to be back up there for a reason. And it was going to come. Well, it was coming. That result was coming. I don't subscribe to this whole nonsense with them about so many injuries, because at the end of the day, I look at their team in some of these matches. People have been going on, like they've been taking people off the street and giving them a shirt to wear. Come on. I mean, let's be honest, what would we give to have Fabinho and Matip as our centre-back pairing, our second-choice centre-back pairing?
Third or fourth, isn't it? Because Gomez is there.
We're not as good as them, nowhere near as good as them. League table doesn't lie. We lose 7-0. The only frustrating thing is it was 7, and it damages our goal difference, which ultimately could come in handy in terms of final league position. That's it. The players don't care. I mean this in the nicest possible way. I can guarantee the players walked off that pitch, were pissed off for 30 minutes, they lost 7-0, and it's going to go, right, whatever, we'll go again.
I don't know if I fully agree with you, but I respect what you're saying. I don't think I fully agree with you there, though. But go on, Ned. You said, to be honest, I agree with a lot of things you said, Ned. But so I'll just put the question to you. Do you think there could have been some tweaks either in-game, because we literally were so static, Roy was so static, did nothing, or, you know, just to, that maybe to tighten up, or,
yeah. So
or
I think, is it just I think like, to answer the first part of that question, I think there is a way too much credit often given during the for in-game management to managers all over the place by your average fan. 99% of what is prepared for a game is done during the week. The actual in-game stuff, sure, sometimes it can make a bit of a difference. If you're losing 7-0, the in-game stuff wasn't going to make the difference. There's bigger issues in that. What I'll say about the game is, look at it and go, Liverpool had the same amount of shots as Tottenham did in the 1-1 draw that we were just talking about, going, gee, weren't we good? Liverpool had the same amount of shots in that game. You know how I love a stat. Liverpool's expected goals was under 3. Mohamed Salah's expected goals was 0.36. He scored 2. So I think you sort of got to sit there at some point and go, well, at the end of the day, you're not going to see a display of clinical finishing like that playing against you. You'll see that once every 5 years, every 10 years, if that, and that's if you're unlucky. So I think from that perspective, as I think a few of you said already, I think the Burnley Newcastle, in terms of if you want to criticise the manager, I think Burnley Newcastle, as you already have, fair enough. There's definitely things that you could look at there, but I think in that particular game, We weren't bad for the first half. We had the same amount of shots on target as they did in the first half. We went in 3-0 down. They had a couple of extra shots that missed. And then you sort of, you go second half, literally every time they got the ball, it ended up in the back of the net. And it wasn't necessarily just walking through no one. Some of the goals they scored were bloody good. And you've got to just go, whatever. I think my personal highlight of the day was after sitting there in the pub after the game, just fairly, just irritated with everything. And one of the blokes opposite just was looking down, and he got a message from his mate that said, Liverpool had outscored 9 of the Indian batsmen in the test match on Saturday, which gave me a bit of a giggle. And I think that was about all you were going to get out of it. And so I just went, all right, well, as long as it doesn't happen again. I mean, as I say, we've been in the Premier League however many years it is now in a row, and that's our first real belting, which there's not many clubs in our position that have been there that much that can go, that can sort of say that. That's our first.
Well, that's 5-0 to City.
Yeah, but I classify sort of 6-7. That's a real belt. 5's not a good day, don't get me wrong. 5-0 is a bad day, but
I understand what you're saying. 5-0 is a football score.
6-0 is still just a football score for me. More than 6 is not a football score. More than 6, right, you start getting into rugby territory.
I understand what you're saying, but then the question I'll ask you, obviously you won't have the stats on you, but apart from Leicester Southampton last year, when obviously Leicester scored 9, since we've been in the Premier League, how many teams have shipped 6 plus?
Yeah, you're right.
I'm going to say it's not that many. So Kane's only taken that beat.
Leeds a day later. Six or more. There'd be quite a few at six. There wouldn't be many. Right. There wouldn't be many at seven.
This season already, you've had Leeds once, Liverpool once, Man United once. That's three times in a season. That's three times in a third of a season.
Yeah.
True.
So it'll be there. I think it happens probably at least once a season as a team who gets that.
Yeah.
And I'd also hazard a guess that the majority of the time it is an absolutely quality team beating a lesser team. And I'd probably say that the lesser team probably didn't do anything overly wrong. The better team just had one of those
days. Really good day. Like I say, if that was something that was happening every second or third time we played a big team, then yeah, I think you got to sit there and go, gee, we've got some real issues here. But it's at the moment, it's an anomaly. Let's just treat it as an anomaly and move on. To be honest,
yep.
I think that's the best way to look at that game.
I would love to do that too.
Can't do anything else with it. Yeah, you just got to go. Yeah, that's fun for the ball. Next week, go again.
Well, you go.
Celts, just quickly, that formation that ultimately we played, 4-4-2, at home to Liverpool, it was the same 4-4-2 we played away at Manchester United.
Very different teams. And very different.
At the start of the game, second game of the season, you would have turned around and said, a Man United side that had Anthony Martial up front, Marcus Rashford, Bruno Fernandes, Dan James, Paul Pogba, Scott McTominay, who just scored two against Leeds in a 6-2 win, you wouldn't have necessarily made us favourites for that game.
No. And,
you know, United had 17 shots. Like, as Ned says, sometimes...
Yeah, they had more shots. So 17 shots for United, 14 for Liverpool.
Yeah. Sometimes it just doesn't go for you. And that is what... And sometimes it does. And I just don't think we should have lost 7-0. You never want to lose 7-0, but sometimes you've just got to go...
Yeah. I think if you play that game and, you know, with the same teams and the same sort of what games style, most weeks you'll lose that game 3-0. Most times you'll lose that game 3-0 if you do the same thing and the same things happen. Most of the time you'll lose 3-0. They've just banged in an extra four, and you got to go, well,
yeah,
fair play.
All those shots aren't, you know. I think it's probably worth a quick mention. With this no crowd COVID business, that's throwing up some curly stuff on a more regular basis than seems to be usual. So that's probably worth a sidebar in there, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It certainly is that the new COVID thing, like loads of games, no pre-season, that type of stuff. I mean, Liverpool losing 7-2 to Villa is just, you know, case in point, right?
Before we move on, can I just have one 30-second rant at Jurgen Klopp just because I don't like him?
None of us like him.
Yeah. If you're going to sit there as a manager and whinge about your players not having, having way too much workload and all that sort of stuff, and you then have a Champions League dead rubber, you pick a full-strength squad, you're 4-0 up against Palace and you bring Mo Salah off the bench, don't fucking whinge. Deal with it. If you're not going to practice what you preach, sit down, shut up and do your job.
Correct.
Sorry, as you were.
Hear. I'm going to whiz through the next, like this bit here because like we've gone on for a bit now. So I just want to talk about, I mean, for me, the biggest thing is how we react, right? And I think Roy's going to have to make changes against Villa. I mean, if he puts the same, I mean, obviously Tekkers will come back in, that's a given. And Jordan and I will hopefully then be farmed back to Swansea, but I don't think that's going to happen. But we can hope and pray. But I mean, with the team selections, I mean, what else? I mean, Dale, we know you'd love to see PVA out. I would like to see Mitchell back in there too. I think it might be time for Macca to take a step out, just arrest a game, Gyro in there, you know, maybe Tompkins come back if he's fit. Dale, what's do you think he'll make a few changes, or is that too many changes for Roy? Do you reckon he's literally going to switch Tekkers back in, which is what he's going to do, nothing else?
I reckon you'll see Benteke in and Townsend in and possibly Tompkins, but I think that'll be it. In an ideal world, I would like to, in a completely ideal world, I'd like to see PVA at left wing, if he's going to play at all. Mitchell at left back. Eze in 10 off Benteke. Wilf in the right wing. And then Jairo and either Cheki Kwakiate or Luka Milivojevic in centre mid. Not going to happen, so whatever.
Good end, right, it's not. But it's, you know, it's a nice thought. We'd love to see that. Maybe the next manager will. Who knows? Ned, do you reckon he's going to make wholesale changes, or we're literally going to see the two that we
think the three. I think the three that Dale said are likely, and that's probably about it. I think the PVA conundrum is the fact that he's so bad defensively, but he is one of the only sort of things that is able to link our defence into our attack. So I think you sort of sit there and you go, when Mitchell was in the side, yes, we looked a lot more compact defensively, but even for a Roy team, we looked even less like going forward. At least if PVA is rampaging forward out of position, at least you know there's a player that's up there. I mean, sure, you're going, why is it your left back? But at least you know there's someone's gone forward, so that if the ball gets to Christian Benteke, there's going to be someone near him. So I think that's where PVA, I mean, as I say, he's horrible defensively, but as a team, generally, we look like we're more likely to do something going forward when he's in it than when he's not. So
yeah.
I think he stays in the side for that reason. But yeah, I think one of the centre backs will be swapped out, and we'll have probably Andros will get a run, and obviously Benteke will come back in. I'd say they'll be your three changes, and I can't see much more than that. As we said, you know, if that team can, you know, if you write that one off as an anomaly, if that team can then produce the kind of performance as they did in the three games before, fair play, and let's hope that's what happens.
That's the thing that makes me nervous, that he's going to go back to like, right, don't cross the halfway line type thing. Look, with regards to that PVA thing, whilst I agree with you 100%, it's much more attacking than Mitchell, that now with Benteke, and I think that Wilf and Eze are getting around him a lot more. So, you know.
It does take away a little bit from his importance, yeah.
Yeah, so I personally, I'd rather have Mitchell in there, and I think if Schlupp get in there, or Townsend, whoever that might be, with Eze and Zaha, I think that'll do. That's enough to give Villa a fair few problems. Mark, you expecting 11 changes as we, or are you expecting just the two or three that Dale has said?
Yeah, I think the boys have hit the nail on the head there with expected changes. And just to give the other side of the field a mention, I wouldn't mind seeing a little Aussie battler, Joel Ward, in it. Right back, a lot of people are banging on about Klein and, oh, how great and his quality and whatever. He's doing a job. I don't see him being streaks better than Joel Ward. I mean, that cross that Wardy put in for Tekka's goal in the West Ham game, sublime, millimetre perfect. And barely got a fucking mention, mate, you know. I mean, the people's elect. Aussie Battler, as I mentioned. So, I just don't see the reams of quality that everyone's banging on about that Nathaniel Klein's bringing to the table that Joel Ward didn't have. Is he a bit quicker? Yeah, probably got half a yard, bit better pace in him, and probably a little bit better technique. But I don't know. I'd have Wardy back just to mix it up. And
I'll just say on the Klein thing, get what you're saying. 17 months he basically didn't play for, which I think he's still getting up to speed. I think there's a difference in quality of the two players. Joel Ward will never let you down. If you have a level of Joel Ward, you're never getting relegated, but it'll also be fucking shit to watch.
Yeah, well, like I said, I just don't see the... Everyone's saying, oh, Klein, this, that. I just don't see the drastic improvement that's been banged on about between him and Joel Ward. Yeah, like you say, just Mr. Dependable. You'd have him in a trench with you, so I'd have him back on that side. And, just like the boy said, maybe J-Mac has a little bit of a sit-out. Gyro in there. It's really great when Eze Wilf and Checkers are doing some 1-2 stuff on the edge of the box, and him steaming through traffic, fantastic to watch. Long may that continue, and a little bit more of that. But yeah, that's all I really see happening. And Big Ben back in the side, obviously, after his suspension from opposition players jumping into his elbow.
Yeah, I think we're all right there. He's going to make 2 or 3. There won't be any more than that. Mark, yeah. Just kind of from what Dale said about Klein as well, I'd kind of agree. The other thing as well, he's much more adept at stopping crosses, whereas Wardy, that's one of Wardy's major weaknesses, is that 9 times out of 10, Wardy will let the cross come in, and I'd say probably 6 or 7 times out of 10, Klein won't. I'd say that's probably the biggest thing. And he does have that extra yard of pace as well, which we desperately need when Cahill appears to be running in treacle. All right, we'll just go jump onto like the next few games. Let's just quickly. We've got Villa, Leicester, Sheffield United. Realistically, what would you say we could get out of that, Mark? Out of those three,
points wise, or
yeah, points wise. I'm at the point now that I don't really care about the performance, to be honest with you. I feel like if we lose the next three, for example, we take a 7-0 hump in and then lose to Villa, Leicester and Sheffield United, we're in big trouble. So, I mean, for me, yes, I want to play well, but I think we've got to steady the ship.
Yeah, realistically, I fancy... I'd love it to be more, but if I'm going with my head and not my heart, I'll suck 4 points out of the next three games. We'll probably have a dour defensive resolute, but dour affair against Villa. We'll nick a point there. Leicester will turn us over by a goal or two, and you fucking hope we roll Sheffield United.
Dale?
4.
Yep. Ned?
4, but in typical Palace fashion, we'll beat Leicester, lose to Sheffield United, and pick up a draw at Wheeler.
Correct.
I was thinking 4 as well. Like, with the exact same 2 that Mark said, to be honest with you, I just don't see us losing Sheffield United.
Let's be honest, though. You don't see us losing Sheffield United. We're going to play them. They won't have a win all season. Sheffield United victory written all over it.
All right, look, I think we'll hold the transfer talk till the next pod, because we'll probably start in January then, and we've been going for about 17 hours now.
But I just want to point this out just quickly, if I pulled this up. Just quickly, for transfers, we were going to talk about what we need, so let's take this food of thought away of us for the Christmas period. Players whose contracts are expiring at the end of the season: Mamadou Sakho, Max Meyer, Scott Dan, Connor Wickham, Jess Schlupp, Patrick Van Aanholt, Andres Townsend, Christian Benteke, Vincente Guaita, James McArthur, Gary Cahill, Wayne Hennessy, Joel Ward, Nathaniel Klein expires in January, Martin Kelly, Nathan Ferguson, which is an odd one, Tyrek Mitchell, Brandon Pierrick, Stephen Henderson, Yaroslav Jack, obviously he's gone, and Sam Woods. So just when we're going to talk about what we need, just remember, players.
Yeah, I reckon you're going to find, from what I hear and what I've read and stuff, of people like Guaita's fairly far down the line for an extension.
Klein will
extend as well.
Just take it away, have it in your head that is a list of players in our current squad whose contracts are ending.
That's a beautiful segue straight over to the Aussie chat, I would have thought, because that's pretty much how every A-League club operates on a 12-month basis.
Yeah, well, look, the big news, it's not anything that Palace have done as in the men's team. The big news is the national meet has been approved for just Tasmania. The biggest news is Robert Seltzer has his plane tickets. So,
can't get into Tasmania from New South Wales.
Yeah, as we speak right now, but we have months, and let's be honest.
Rob has organised a global pandemic to avoid getting it, to avoid having to go to the national meetup. He got shuffled to 2021, and he's organised an outbreak on the Central Coast. I mean,
that's a flight credit when that happens.
In fairness, Rob, that is commitment.
Exactly.
Next level commitment.
as I said, hopefully they'll just probably cancel it and I'll just use that flight credit to somewhere I want to go. So that's good. All right. So, I mean, I see the A-League's been delayed. So I'm going to hand over to our Aussie correspondents, Ned and Marky Mark, to bring us up to everything Aussie football, as we are based here. Over to you, boys.
Well, I don't think it's been delayed. I think I just rearranged the fixtures a bit.
I was going to say, not delayed, mate, just a reshuffle.
Yeah, so basically all the New South Wales...
Channel 7 News.
Well, there's your problem. Channel 7 News talking about football. If it's not AFL, then it's probably wrong. They've just rearranged the fixtures. So all the teams in New South Wales, including Wellington Phoenix, who are currently based in New South Wales, will all play each other at the start while they hope desperately that they're allowed to travel outside once the first four games or so are over. I'm sorry, Mark, I've just stolen your thunder, but because I'm a Melbourne Victory fan, and despite being the worst Melbourne Victory team we've ever seen, we managed to get ourselves into the last 16 of the Asian Champions League, where we probably lost. But hey, no one else had done that for ages. So yay, go us. We've also turned into circa 2014 Blackburn Rovers. With maybe a bit of Middlesbrough, we're going to get promoted to the Premier League 2015. Signed Rudy Justed, Ryan Shotton, Callum McManaman and Jacob Butterfield, which a few people will recognise those names if you watched terrible standard championship football around 2013 or so.
Rudy Justed, weren't we massively linked with him at one point?
Probably. We had Jacob Butterfield on our books for three games.
It was one of the ones where the fans kept saying we should get Rudy Gusted. We've probably never even spoken to him.
Which is, Rudy Gusted is probably the same ability as myself, so probably not a bad thing.
He'll bang in 25 this year.
Yeah.
Over to you, Mark. What do you got for us?
Mate. So the A-League reshuffle. Ned, play your mob in rounds 2 and 3. So consecutive weeks, we take on the might of Melbourne Victory. In a broader spectrum, World Cup gold scorer, Costa Rican gentleman Marcos Urena, has joined the Central Coast Mariners. Going to your neck of the woods there, Rob.
That'll get Rob in the stadium.
They'll get me there to look at those sauce bottles again.
Yeah. So, if he was worried about going to the World Cup in Brazil in 2014 in a minnow nation, that's going to really be ramped up when he plays for the Central Coast Mariners in the A-League. It's about as minnow as you can get. But good luck to him. So that's a bit of flair coming down under for the pending season. All things Aussies broad. Tom Rogic, who's just completed the quadruple treble, which is not a feat often done by any teams in any league.
Except Celtic.
I think we're nudging out Hearts for the one of the cups there. So the Scottish Cup, obviously the Scottish Premier League and the Scottish League Cup, those 3-4 years running. So... well done to him and Celtic, slapping them all about the ears over there. Awa Mabil plays for Midtjylland, banged in a goal in the European Champions League a week or two ago. I think it was against Ajax. It was a pen, to be fair, but not a lot of Aussies banging in a lot of goals in the European Champions League, so I thought that was worth a mention. There's about 72 Aussie women abroad coming back to play in the A-League this season. So looking forward to them going down. That's about it. Looking forward to the meet-up in Tassie. Get down there. Come one, come all.
Yep.
That's it.
I was going to say, with Matt Ryan on the outer at Brighton, we're also about to lose all of the Australians from the Premier League. So none to watch there, which is good. But I did notice one of your mob... Mark up in Brisbane, his kid has just signed for the Palace Academy, age 9.
Oh no, that's gone through to the keeper on me, mate. I know nothing about
that's
it.
Right, I think, yeah,
I saw that on Facebook as well. Ned.
Yeah, no, it was one of the guys from up in Queensland. His son's just joined the Palace Academy, age 9. So we'll claim that one.
That's
a Palace. That's exactly. That's a
that's as close as we're going to get to an Aussie at Palace at the moment, apart from J. Rich Bagulu, who no one's heard of for 6 months. Anyway, that'll do. Plug the meetup more, Rob, because you're going to be there. And
Wait, Rob, the tickets are there. As long as I can get in to Tasmania, tickets
good news
are
is we'll all be there. We'll all be there if we can get there, which will be the first time.
Yeah, 26th of February, fly in, 10:55 I land. So straight to a pub of some description. And
I think we're going to Hobart. We're going to Hobart, Rob. You'll be going to the pub. There's only one.
I do. We've got an amazing pizza place I'd like to go to as well.
Sounds good. If you happen to be anywhere near Australia or you're allowed in Hobart,
yes,
for the first time in history, will be the place to be.
That's it. So anyone that's listening to this that hasn't bought a ticket, buy your tickets, get down there. We can't go abroad, so we might as well all go down there, which is basically abroad anyway, Tasmania.
Last weekend of Feb. Yes,
26th to 28th. We'd love to see as many people as we can there. Get a good crew out. I do believe we'll be watching Palace in a field with a projector, something like that, against a cow. So it will be interesting. So look, that just leads me to thank Dale, Ned and Mark for this bumper pod. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for hosting all year, mate. Merry Christmas to everybody.
So, yes, exactly that, Mark. So, Merry Christmas to everyone on the pod and listening. Have a great new year. You can only go up from here. And as we always say, that if there is any, you're lonely or you just want to talk to people, please reach out to us on Facebook. More than happy to set up a call, just chat to you, do whatever you need to do, talk Palace, then watch a game with us, whatever you want to do. So that's options always available to you. So we're Exiled Eagles on Facebook as well. Please feel free to reach out. But it leaves me to say, as once again, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to one and all, and up the Palace.
Going to have a mango whisper with my wife. So
and like, hold on, do you eat at every pot? Like, normally it's like, I've got dinner now, or I've got a chocolate cake downstairs, I've got to go eat. Now you go for a mango whisper.